Will the pandemic, as you see it, increase the need for health care for all people long term?
Well, we've needed affordable, quality health care for all people long term since before the pandemic, and we've made very very good progress on that. But I'd say in particular, we've built up the resiliency of our healthcare system in a way that will make it stronger as a result of the pandemic, delivering multiple shipments from the Strategic National Stockpile to local area hospitals, over $100 billion in direct assistance to our hospitals and nursing home and frontline healthcare workers, building up the resiliency of our domestic medical equipment supply chains. That work continues. We voted for, and I was very proud to vote for, free COVID testing for all Americans. Obviously, we've expanded telehealth, and that's one of the great takeaways that will expand access to healthcare for all Americans beyond the pandemic, is now we're going to be using telemedicine more frequently. We want to make those pandemic-related changes permanent so that better access to higher quality healthcare will outlive the pandemic. And I'm very proud of my role in providing funding for Operation Warp Speed, which has delivered 4 to 5 safe and effective vaccines in phase 3 clinical trials. I expect, because of the billions of dollars we've appropriated for the development of therapies and safe and effective vaccine, we will have 300 doses of a safe and effective vaccine that's gone through the gold standard of FDA approval process by January of 2021.
How will the Horse Integrity and Safety Act, with the emphasis both on drug issues and horses and track safety, will that change the thoroughbred racing industry?
Yes, it will, and for the positive. I think it helps secure the future prosperity, safety, and integrity of the sport. It's going to help us attract a new generation of fans. It's going to limit the number of catastrophic breakdowns that I think damage the reputation of the industry. It's going to increase the public's confidence in the sport as a beautiful sport, but also it's going to help the 40,000-plus direct jobs in Central Kentucky and 60,000-plus indirect jobs. It's going to drive economic development and make American thoroughbred racing, both in terms of our breeding stock and our racing stock, much more competitive internationally. So I think this is a huge step forward for our signature industry, and I'm proud that persistence has paid off. This has been a 6-year project of mine. It's good bipartisan work, and I'm very optimistic that it will ultimately pass the Senate, now that we've passed it out of the House unanimously, and get to the president's desk for a signature, hopefully before the end of the year.
What, if anything, needs to change in policing, and what about federal police standards?
Well, that makes sense to me in terms of promoting better community policing. And I support Senator Tim Scott's bill. I was very, very upset and disappointed that for whatever reason, Democrats did not want to support a very sensible bill. We support an increase in federal funding, $1.75 billion in additional federal funding to make that money available to local law enforcement agencies for better training, to make sure our law enforcement officers are trained, to increase community policing so that people understand the police are on their side to protect and serve. They're not adversaries. And then also 500,000 additional body cameras and equipment. We need to make sure our police are well equipped and well trained. One thing I would say is we need to oppose this dangerous idea of defunding the police. I think that would actually exacerbate the problem of bad actors within police departments. I think if anything, under-resourced police departments will lead to substandard training and not the right kind of people in the police. If we adequately resource our police departments, we're going to get the best and brightest, and people who avoid, the racism and other kinds of prejudice.
Outside of Lexington, how best to further the economies of the other counties in the district?
Well, of course, agriculture dominates a lot of that. Manufacturing dominates a lot of that. I think one of the things that we've learned from the pandemic is we need to onshore manufacturing resiliency and decrease our over-reliance on China in terms of manufacturing. We've got a lot of manufacturing in the counties outside of Fayette County. And I think building up and standing up a more resilient manufacturing base will help jobs and employment in those counties. I think rural broadband is vitally important for distance learning and for providing economic development and opportunity in rural America. I have introduced legislation called the Expanded Rural Broadband Act that would allow local communities to use their coronavirus relief funds from the CARES Act to expand rural broadband. And I think it's very important for precision agriculture to increase the productivity of our agricultural lands through rural broadband deployment. So those are just some ideas that I have, but I think the main thing we've got to do for all of our local economies is to make the tax cuts permanent and not reverse those tax cuts. That led to the best economy in 50 years before the pandemic. And I think these proposals to roll back tax cuts for middle-class families into small businesses, that would be a disaster. And when you talk about underserved rural communities, we need to make these opportunity zones permanent, which create $10 billion in new investment in underserved communities every year, including those rural communities. Final point, I've introduced a bill to increase access to capital in rural counties like those counties outside of Fayette County. We've seen a very precipitous decline in bank branches in rural America. I have a bill that would increase the number of new banks and bank branches so that entrepreneurs and farmers and small businesses can access capital they need to build businesses and grow jobs.
Andy, Social Security used to be a popular topic. You don't hear about it as much recently, it doesn't seem like, but there have been fears it'll go away someday. Do you think that we'll have Social Security for 10, 20, 30 years from now?
I do, but I do worry about both Medicare and Social Security and the sustainability of those programs. We need to make sure that we force the government to keep its promises to workers who are paying taxes into Social Security and Medicare, and it needs to be there for workers when they retire. If we don't make some sensible reforms to Social Security and Medicare, the government's going to start breaking its promises to young people who are working right now paying taxes. That's not fair. We have to force the government to keep its promises, and that means we need to put Social Security and Medicare on a more sustainable trajectory.
Is there a feasible way to significantly reduce partisanship, still hold on to the political philosophies of both Democrats and Republicans, but actually work out issues in, you know, a more productive way?
Stu, I think a lot of it has to do with the golden rule, just treat others as you would have them treat you, and respectful disagreement is something I fear we're losing in this country. We've had tough political polarized times in our past. I mean, this country survived a civil war, for goodness sakes, but we need to get back to a more civil tone. That's why I participate every week in Washington, D.C. in a bipartisan working group. In fact, I co-chair this bipartisan working group with my friend and colleague, Democrat Derek Kilmer from Washington State. And I can say, because of that group, some of my best personal friends in Congress are Democrats. Jimmy Panetta, Tom Suozzi, and I, we've become really good personal friends, and we have vigorous disagreements on politics and on some policy, but because we've become personal friends, and because I've worked, for example, with Democrat Paul Tonko, a liberal from New York, on horse racing reform, I have learned how to actually build consensus, develop friendships, and those friendships become the basis for policy consensus and policy agreement and compromise, which I think we need more of in Washington.
We're in the midst of, I think it's fair to say, with the pandemic, I'll call it a masking debate about whether or not to wear a mask. Are you surprised at that?
It's disappointing. I think masking is simply what the epidemiologists recommend. I think it makes a lot of sense. I think it's really important to open up the economy. I oppose some of these draconian shutdowns of our economy, shutdowns of schools, which runs counter to the advice of the American Academy of Pediatrics. I think a mask and social distancing and hand hygiene, that's the way to reopen the economy. The other way to reopen the economy, in addition to basic masking, would be liability protection, liability reform. I think if we could pass sensible liability reform for businesses and healthcare workers that follow CDC guidelines and prevent trial lawyers from filing frivolous lawsuits, I think that, in addition to masking, would be the best step forward in terms of opening up the economy safely.
Andy, I've done this a long time. I interviewed you the night that you won your first term in Congress, and at that time you mentioned that you felt that 12 years in Congress was a reasonable amount of time in terms of when I ask you about term limits. Do you still feel that way?
Yeah, I do support term limits. I've voted for, or rather, we haven't had a vote on term limits in some time. In fact, it's been so long, I can't remember when we had a vote on term limits. But I have, nevertheless, I have co-sponsored a constitutional amendment to impose a six-term limit on members of Congress in the House and a two-term limit on members of the Senate. What I've come to learn and understand and appreciate, however, in my time in Washington is that where we need term limits the most is not in the legislative branch, it's in the executive branch. We have unaccountable, unelected bureaucrats who really run the country, and I'd like to see more turnover. Certainly, professional expertise can be helpful, but we do need more turnover in the executive branch. One thing I will say is that I do not support imposing term limits retroactively on members of Congress. Every member of Congress should live by the same rule. Otherwise, it's not fair to impose a term limit on one set of members of Congress and impose a different set. So the term limits proposals that I have always supported are term limits that would apply prospectively, so that every member of Congress would be living under the same set of rules.
Mm-hmm. Very difficult question here, I think, in some ways, but you have gone through a very traumatic experience in your life with the loss of your wife. Has there been a moment or two or maybe three where you've thought about getting out of politics?
Well, look, I mean, obviously, after this tragedy, we had to reevaluate everything. My priority has been before this and certainly now is my kids. And we got to do what's in the best interest of our kids. So I took a good bit of time off focusing on my girls, getting their situation as stable as possible. I did nothing with the campaign at all. I did go back to Washington a few times this summer to fulfill my responsibilities in committees and to vote. But I really just suspended my campaigning. So I've had to kind of catch up on the political side. But once I got the kids' situation stabilized, and we hired some help to help with the kids. And I've got a really good family support system. Fortunately, I'm very blessed in that regard. We decided to stick with it and run for another term and try to help the Republicans regain the majority, which is my commitment to my colleagues. But one thing I will say overall is that my wife, Carol, she cared most importantly about our kids. That was her number one priority, and it was her legacy. It's her greatest legacy, and she cared very deeply about our future, and she cared about what we're doing. And I think what we are doing to try to secure a better, brighter future for our kids and for everyone's children and the next generation, I think that honors her life, and we're going to continue to fight for not just my kids, but for the future of all young Central Kentuckians and all Americans.
Mm-hmm. Going from a very obviously serious, difficult situation, I do want to end with a lighter note question, and that is, do you have a favorite song or favorite band?
Yeah, I do. So I was born in 1973. I'm not afraid to admit my age. I'm 47, and I grew up in the era of Ronald Reagan in the 1980s. So 80s music is kind of my thing. And the Police, Sting and the Police, they're my favorite band. I love the Cars. I love David Bowie. I love the Talking Heads. That's my era. Journey, anything from the 1980s is I love Van Halen. You know, that's the 1980s, and that's my music.